In the name of the one holy and living God. Well, good morning, saints. It is a privilege and a delight to return to this magnificent cathedral and to this pulpit. I want to thank your bishop, Bishop Wayne, who has been my bishop coach and a colleague for many years. I want to thank your dean, the Very Reverend Kathy Adams Shepherd, for the extraordinary gift of the invitation to share with you in this bicentennial moment. Before I go too far, I just want you to know, Christ Church Cathedral, that you have one of the most gifted priests in the church as your dean. I hope you know that, and I pray that God continues to bless you all in this ministry together. It is indeed, I believe, for such a time as this that you have been called to journey together at this place for this time. It's been quite a weekend, hasn't it? In the midst of what seems like really incredibly challenging days, you were all due, I think we were all due for a celebration. And this weekend has been that, a celebration of being a cathedral community that has much to celebrate. God is continuing to do a new thing right here, and we must rejoice and be glad in it. Friday night, I spoke a little bit about my own connection to this place. My favorite place to sit was always about midway on the left side over here, kind of where David is sitting, although a couple of seats in, because I would never sit on the aisle. And I remember, I think there were smaller wooden chairs. Does anybody remember those? They weren't these comfy upholstered things you get today. But nevertheless, I reveled in my opportunities to worship here. I also want to just remind us all that I am thankful for the ministry of Bishop Jackson Kemper and the way he has played a role in the life of this cathedral, in the life of my diocese, the Diocese of Indianapolis. And I note that because this weekend is not just a celebration for Christ Church Cathedral, St. Louis, but it's a celebration for the whole church. What you have been, the ministry you have today, the ministry you are called forward into, is not for St. Louis alone, is not for the Diocese of Missouri alone, it is for the sake of the church and the world. Now, I have to confess to you that as I contemplated the observance of All Saints and All Faithful Departed, this Triduum we've been celebrating, I had in my mind the image of a child named Tyrese. Anybody remember that name, Tyrese? You might remember, if not his name, you might remember his image. I think it was about right over here on this wall where there was the exhibit, Faces Not Forgotten. And that was, I was here in February 2015 last time, and that exhibit was up. And I took a picture of his face. It was this exhibit that painted the images of those who had been lost to gun violence. And I was struck by Tyrese, perhaps because his image looked so much like my own son. But his image captured innocence and the loss of possible futures all at once. His face and that life that won't be lived still haunts me. I think about singing a song of the saints of God, I think of Tyrese. His memory lives because of the witness of this cathedral. With every votive that you light on that high altar, to remember those who've died by gun violence in this city, you remind this community and the world that violence is not a statistician's game, but these were people, often children, with lives, with names, with legacies. I want to talk a little bit about our gospel lesson today, because when we think about what we're raising up with all of our celebrating and thinking about what is the ministry of this place, the Sermon of the Mount, which is the reading we're always given for the observance of All Saints, seems particularly appropriate. all of those Beatitudes, literally the Blesseds. Now, you know, there's nothing new I can say about the Beatitudes. They've been written about forever and ever. In fact, my first religious paper as a sophomore in college was on the Beatitudes, and I had not been baptized or really attending church for very long and knew nothing about what I was talking about. So I feel like many, many people have opined and written theologically about what the Beatitudes are about. But when I think about what we might draw from them today, I think about how they form kind of an ethic of being, sort of a way for us to think about how we are to be our best selves in the world and how we're to contend with some of the tensions and conflicts in what it means to follow God, to follow Jesus in this way. We read and hear the Beatitudes in our ears this morning, and perhaps they feel a little bit too close, too tender. The blesseds and the woes. And then we get to that second half of the Beatitudes where Jesus is talking to his disciples and, you know, talking about the really, really difficult things that we have to figure out how to do. You know, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. Give to everyone who begs from you. Do to others as you would have them do to you. Such a tall order. In this feast, I think we, this Feast of All Saints, we recognize that not all saints were saintly. Not really. All saints aren't always sort of the serene, cherubic, perfect images that we like to think about. But actually, it's the opposite. I imagine what it takes to be a Saint Francis who's able to walk away from his riches, or to face down the lions like the early martyrs, or to lead a people to freedom like Harriet Tubman, or fill in the blank with whoever you would lift up as the person you want to remember today. You'll know that these saints, most saints, were feisty and strong and quirky and imperfect, kind of like all of us. They're saintly because they're not interested in sort of staying above the fray, but they get their hands and their lives dirty in the muck of life with real people. These saints understood that the kingdom belongs to those who know their poverty and their meekness before God and who hunger for righteousness and have felt the bitterness of being scorned and reviled for following in the ways of Jesus. Sound familiar? Friends, this is part of the cost of discipleship, not just for the saints, but for all of us who follow Jesus in the way of love. Now, here's where I'm going to get into something that might be a little controversial, so there's a little heads up. Because when you start talking about what I like to think about as respectability politics in the church, people get a little nervous. So just know that I get it. But we have to talk about this conflict we have with what we want to be as Christians, following Jesus faithfully, and then the cost of doing that difficult work, which means that we might need to give up things we don't want to give up. We might want to love those we don't want to love. We might need to have our institutions do things that aren't seemly, because that is the way of walking faithfully. If I were to look at what the definition of respectability politics is, it would look like those who typically are marginalized, who police their own members and show their social values as being continuous and compatible with dominant values, rather than challenging the mainstream for what they see as its failure to accept difference. In my conversations with Black folks, we talk about respectability politics all the time. The church doesn't talk about it much, but we still kind of play the game. While Christianity no doubt has its privileges, we have our privileges for sure in this society. We play our own version of this game by having this resistance to doing some of the hard things that need to be done to transform the world because it might make people uncomfortable. So in general, we are inclined to sit on the sidelines sit on the sidelines of the march rather than get on the protest line. In general, we are more prone to read about the issue of white supremacy than to call it out when we see it at work. In general, we often prefer to stay above the fray instead of getting in the muck of life with people who can't or won't or don't look like us, dress like us, think like us, all the rest. But you, Christchurch Cathedral, you have been wrestling with these issues for a long time. When I say in general, I think that there is an exception going on here that the church needs to see and understand and watch and emulate. In a sense, when I think about this cathedral, when I first encountered it some 28 years ago or so, I have a sense that you have given up the gilded status of cathedral to be a cathedral and sanctuary for all the people. For all the people. For over 200 years and a couple of days, you have weathered the ups and downs of life in this city, and you have stood as a witness of what it means to be a cathedral of compassion in the way that Henry Nouwen spoke of it. He wrote that compassion grows with the inner recognition that your neighbor shares your humanity with you. Your neighbor shares your humanity. Not some neighbors, your neighbor shares your humanity. This partnership cuts through all walls which might have kept you separate, across all barriers of land and language, wealth and poverty, knowledge and ignorance. We are one, he wrote, created from the same dust, subject to the same laws, destined for the same end. So what is the church for, but then to be that? What is a cathedral for? Of course, it's for gathering the community together to worship, to praise God, to provide sanctuary, but it's also for helping the world remember those whom we might otherwise forget. It's about amplifying the voices that the world wants to silence. It's for bringing to the forefront those the world wants to make invisible. It's for lighting candles to remind the world that God is keeping count and remembers the lives of every one of God's beloved, all the saints, not just the beautiful saints, all the saints, not just the famous saints, all the saints, not just the middle class saints, all the saints. And we know this is true because our God does not observe us from a distance, but is present and active and down here in the muck with us all. I love the way Luke Bellman once put it. He says that we worship a God who does not exist only in the powerful and the beautiful things of the world, but we worship a God who is also present in the weak, in the outcast, in the ugly, and the failed things. So Christchurch Cathedral, in this beautifully inspiring space that's just been prayed up for the decades this building has been standing here, the city that has been prayed up for the decades and centuries that this community has been here, whether it's in this building or on the steps outside those doors, this cathedral exists for all. The powerful and the beautiful, but also the weak and the outcast and the failed. Who will stand up for the weak, the outcast, and the failed if it is not those of us who know something about a Jesus who was once counted as the weak, the outcast, and the failed and came through resurrection to show us that death would never have the last word? That is our call. That is your witness. That is who you have been in season and out of season, and God needs you here. The saints and the souls rest in the mercy of God, but make no mistake, the saints and souls and all who have gone before are watching. They are counting on us. They are watching and hoping and praying with and for us that we can help transform this world to be the place where all have fullness of life, where we don't have to worry about the walls, or the hungry, or the outcast, or the homeless, because we actually have all we need together. They are watching. Those who have gone before, those who live on in your memories, are watching, praying, and hoping with us that we will work and collaborate with God to make this the place that God desires for us. For the sake of those who have gone before, for the sake of those who live today, for the sake of those who will come after us, Christ Church, you must continue to witness, you must continue to work, and you must continue to weave this new future with God. You have nothing to fear. What else could happen? Honestly, to this cathedral, what else could happen? You have nothing to fear, and you have all you need. So may God continue to bless you in your witness. We in the Diocese of Indianapolis are watching and praying and working and hoping with you. So you are not in this work alone. We're in it together, led by our Christ. May you be forever blessed. Amen.